Yeah, speaking of the end of an era, 720 WGN, I'm John Landecker at 639. Thank you for joining us. News came out of Hollywood today that Peter Bogdanovich, the Oscar-nominated director and a champion, if you will, of Hollywood's golden age, died at age 82. And what we heard there was part of a promo for the picture that put him on the map, and that was The Last Picture Show, which came out in the early 60s and was in black and white. And before I talk about it anymore, we have Blockbuster Blake Stubbs. Hey, how you doing?
Hi, John. It's a pleasure to be here with you on the show. Thanks for having me.
Now, what is your name? Your name is Blake Stubbs, or are you really Blockbuster? Is Blockbuster truly your first name?
I wish, truly. I do.
I like it. I like the handle.
That was a nickname given to me by a WGN, friend of WGN, Dane Neal, and then also John Hansen, who's an old friend of mine.
Oh, sure.
So, yeah, I've a little mantle that just kind of kicked off a few years back, and for whatever reason, it has stuck, and I'm good with it.
Yeah, especially since you love the movies, and as we all remember, the Blockbuster chain at one point was the place to go. So give me some reflections, if you will, on Bogdanovich and the initial success of The Last Picture Show, which was black and white, set in a Texas town, had 8 Academy Award nominations, introduced the world to Sybil Shepherd. Well, not introduced, but she had been on the cover of some fashion magazine. She was a model, and everybody really got a good look at her in this movie, if you know what I'm saying.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, in your view, what was, in a encapsulated version, what was Bogdanovich's contribution to American cinema? And specifically, let's start with The Last Picture Show.
Okay. Well, in the case of The Last Picture Show, this was his second feature film that he was hired by Columbia Pictures. They hired him to write and direct the film. He would then get Oscar nominations for both writing and directing. He would also win the BAFTA that year for writing the film. It was a massive success. It was considered a masterpiece by most critics at the time. Yeah. Other filmmakers heralded it as one of the finest films of that era of filmmaking. And in 71, honestly, it predates me. I won't lie. I'm
right.
A little young, but I will say this. If you do any reading about that era of shifting in the way Hollywood was making movies and how directors were rising and becoming auteurs and stepping in and making the films they wanted to make, Bogdanovich was one of probably, if not the hottest name to have in a director's chair after that film. It was a meteoric film for him.
It did indeed put him on the map, put a lot of people on the map. Sybil Shepherd, as I said, he had supporting actor awards for Cloris Leachman and Ben Johnson. The whole Sybil Shepherd.
Timothy Bottoms.
Yeah.
It's a packed cast. And I think that was that was some genius casting across the board for that particular picture. And nowadays, a movie like that would be very hard to cast a film so well, in my personal opinion.
Yeah, and in 1971, the success of a movie being in black and white was not an everyday occurrence.
No, it was not.
And I specifically, you know, I don't know if you realize this, Blockbuster Blake Stubbs, but I am old enough to remember this movie. It really made an impression on people of my generation, at least, on a lot of different levels, because it was dealing with teenagers in late high school, early college, going to war, enlisting, and then at the same time existing in a really sort of Texas town that was, you know, literally one of those towns that had tumbleweeds blowing through it because it was dusty, and it just really, he captured the essence of that scene, and also the way these characters portrayed their parts. It was something that people really hadn't seen before, I think.
I think you are hitting the nail right on the head, particularly just because it seems like in a lot of ways, and the way that he would write, and particularly with The Last Picture Show, it comes off as a deeply personal view of something, or like he's almost like venting frustrations in some ways while he's romanticizing other things. And the reason I think audiences connected with the film so much is that it was able to encapsulate so much, with the backdrop being this small, isolated, you know, the economics of the town were starting to decline, and the pure atmosphere around all the characters, you know, you can have great characters, but if you have an awesome playground for them to interact in, it's going to connect, and it's going to make something that audiences will relate to and also discuss. You know,
we're talking
the
to
shows is the type of movie that people discuss, is where I'm going with
indeed.
That.
Indeed. We're talking to, as we are now, we're talking to blockbuster Blake Stubbs. We're taking a look at the career of Peter Bogdanovich, who happened to pass away at the age of 82. 720 WGN, I'm John Landecker at 648. We're talking with blockbuster Blake Stubbs about the passing of Peter Bogdanovich, who, flame on, flame off, a little bit in my opinion. We started out with the best, the Last Picture Show, which was critically acclaimed, and then what we've just, a clip there from Paper Moon, which also was a gigantic hit, that had a best Oscar award for Tatum O'Neill. Isn't that right? I believe so, yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
And it was not that much of a departure, really, from the era of The Last Picture Show, in the sense that both were done in black and white. A lot of it was in a rural setting, and these were people who were just getting by, so to speak.
Yes. There are some wonderful comedic bits in Paper Moon that I will recall strictly because I remember watching it. I wouldn't, as a kid with my grandparents, and particularly the bit where Tatum O'Neill would be at the carnival and she said, "Well, I'll give you two tens and you give me two twenties." And if you can remember that line of dialogue, you instantly kind of start to giggle because people would fall for it. But I remember watching it, my grandparents cracking up, and then of course I've seen it since then and found it to be a very entertaining movie. It's also the type of thing where that father-daughter dynamic between Ryan and Tatum O'Neill is just very natural, obviously. Like, it just fits on camera so well. And I think another thing to mention is with black and white, you know, in an era where black and white films were not really the norm because of when they were made, this was a director's type of choice. You know, Bogdanovich was also an editor. He was also, he shot one of his films. I believe he shot Wild Angels, but he was uncredited on it. Like, this is a guy who could do it all because he learned how to do it all. And his love of cinema is what drew him into the industry through a chance encounter with someone like Roger Corman, another legend. And then he would end up directing two films back to back that the public and the critics loved. He would then, of course, have, you know, a bit of trial and tribulation. There were bankruptcies. His romantic life was dragged through the papers. All of these types of things. But the other thing to note about him is that regardless of all that, unquestionably, he was always known as a true cinephile, lover of the medium, and somebody who could write exquisitely well when he was trying to talk about classic icons like Orson Welles. His book, This is Orson Welles, comes to mind immediately. He had great conversations with some of his idols and had those published. These are all things that a director, who is not just a director, but sort of like a Renaissance man when it comes to cinema, has left behind. So Bogdanovich is not just a director. If this is a name you're hearing for the first time out there, know that this is a guy you could look up and go down the rabbit hole with, and he is an incredibly interesting man.
In a certain way, to compare him to someone more contemporary, it sounds like he is almost like the Quentin Tarantino of his time.
Well, Tarantino actually had him as a DJ voice in Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2. Yes,
no
he was one
kidding.
Of Tarantino's,
I had no idea. Wow.
Yes. So, yeah, the cuts go a little deep when you get into that little into the pool, I guess.
And
where are all these connections? But, I guess the phrase could be game recognized game, and Tarantino wanted to have one of his heroes be a part of one of his films. And oddly enough, you know, Bogdanovich, a man of many talents, sort of just fit right in there. And of course, those with very keen ears will recognize his voice. He actually did a great deal. You can actually, if you have the Criterion Channel, you can watch several of them. He did outstanding introductions for other films. Films he didn't write, didn't direct, but as a historian, you know, he offers a lot of presence and had a very eloquent way of introducing classic films, such as like The Third Man, for instance.
Yeah.
Just as an example.
No, you referenced Wild Angels, and I remember distinctly, this is long before I ever heard about Bogdanovich, because I don't know if,
right.
Well, I wasn't looking at the credits. I was trying to make out with my girlfriend because we were at the drive-in. And I think that is a, was that an American international film? It's Peter Fonda, and it's a motorcycle flick. It's a motorcycle
yes.
gang, I'm sorry, motorcycle club film. And I've always liked it, and it's really gritty. And then I was reading about it today, getting ready to talk to you. And I guess he took over, from what I understand, the second half of that, and as you say, completed it. And it was a huge financial success. I mean, we're going way back now, but I think it was made for $15,000 or $20,000 and grossed in the millions. And anytime anything happens with that kind of relationship in Hollywood, everybody takes note. They want to know who did it, and then they want that person to do some more.
And a lot of that was him and Roger Corman's connection.
Yeah.
Because Corman is kind of labeled as the director, but he hired Bogdanovich in to work on the film. And then that parlayed into him directing Targets, which then led to The Last Picture Show, and so on and so forth. And, you know, just a little note, there was a point in time where I lived in the Palm Springs area. So a lot of what is in the general like atmosphere of where Wild Angels takes place
is
very familiar to me, and it's very near and dear to my heart. So if you're looking for a cool movie that was shot for very little money on location, there you go.
Oh, I got the theme from Wild Angels going on in my head. I think it starts with a motorcycle engine. Oh, anyway, I digress. So Bogdanovich, we're talking to, by the way, Blockbuster Blake Stubbs about the passing of really an iconic member of the Hollywood film industry and history, and that is Peter Bogdanovich. So we have The Last Picture Show, then we get, which was a huge success, then you have Paper Moon with Tatum O'Neill winning an Oscar. That's a huge success. And then things seem to get a little bumpy. And if you don't know who he was or have any idea, if you were a viewer of The Sopranos, he played the psychotherapist in that series. That's just an aside. But as you referenced earlier, once these two movies passed, I mean, there were other films, but there was nothing really was there that rose to the level of The Last Picture Show and Paper Moon.
As far as critical and commercial success, the short answer is really no, unfortunately. And a lot of that had to do with, I believe, politics in Hollywood at the time.
Mm-hmm.
This was a guy who I respect a great deal when a director doesn't want to compromise vision and wants to make the movies they want to make. I think that heads butted together at times. I feel that his personal life also played into it, the fact that the media wasn't too friendly to him. This is like a sad case once you get beyond the early 70s into the 80s and 90s. Now, of course, you know, an entire generation of moviegoers who then would later become, I guess, film directors and writers and everything, they appreciated the work that he did. And they found ways to incorporate him in this newer era of Hollywood. And, I mean, he would occasionally direct an episode of television or feature on an episode of television, I guess, and things like that, where he was never really completely detached.
Right.
But his limelight time had passed, and you know, hey, if you're going to have a major success story and you make a true masterpiece, it's not the worst thing in the world that everyone will always remember you for that. Now, when you start reading about Peter Bogdanovich and learning, though, you find how interesting he was and how multifaceted he was as both a journalist, a writer, a critic, which is how he got started. Then a chance encounter led to him directing a movie eventually. And then he, you know, I mean, it's a very interesting, I wouldn't call it rags to riches, but I would definitely call it a interesting newer Hollywood era story for the time that it all took place.
Well, that early 70s period for a few years, like, and into 1972, he put together a company with Francis Ford Coppola and William Friedkin at Paramount in 1972, and then... I mean, those are huge names, if you can imagine.
Those are true cavalier directors,
God.
Absolutely.
And,
three of my favorites.
But yet that company didn't work for some reason.
Not entirely. And I think a lot of it had to do with you had three minds and three genius level minds mm-hmm. that wanted to do things their
yes.
way.
Yeah.
They very easily rub people the wrong way and were not going to play by Hollywood's rules. They wanted to make their own films.
Yeah.
And I mean, look, you can go read about any of those directors in question, and you're going to find all kinds of interesting stories about how their movies got made and how difficult it was for them to do it. I mean, Apocalypse Now almost killed Francis Ford Coppola. So it's one of those things where when you really dig in deep and start reading, sometimes learning about how the movies are made makes them even more interesting when you see the finished product. And it may be a finished product you know backwards and forwards, but still not knowing what it took to get there.
Yes.
Sometimes it can really add an extra niche element that just makes it all the more interesting.
You know, there's also it certainly is a Chicago connection in the sense when you start talking about Playboy, there were tabloid headlines in the early 80s when the Playmate of the Year, Dorothy Stratton, with whom Bogdanovich had an affair while they were doing a romantic comedy, They All Left, was murdered by her husband, Paul Snyder, who then killed himself. And some people pointed the finger at Hefner.
Hefner.
So this also sort of muddies the water, if you will, as far as public relations. But really, you know, quite frankly, has nothing to do with making a movie. But that's, you know, the way show business and Hollywood works. And I want to thank you, Blockbuster Blake Stubbs, for joining me. I've enjoyed this immensely, and hopefully we can do this again sometime when the
Anytime.
Moment is right.
All right. I'm in.
All right. Thank you
so much.
Thanks for being with us.